Welcome to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. Let's get today's show started with your host and founder of the BD Academy, Rob Brown.
Welcome to the show, and I'm thrilled to have with me today, all the way from Australia, it's Rhonda Lynn Korolak. Hello to you.
Hello.
Welcome to the show. Rhonda Lynn, just for the benefit of people that may not have heard of you, can you just tell us a bit about your background and your expertise?
Well, born and bred in southern Alberta, up in Canada, so not too different climate to what you're used to in the UK, but I immigrated here about 14 years ago. So I'm a qualified chartered accountant, and I also practice law in the tax department at PwC up there. So basically, my primary accounting experience came from big four, working in oil and gas taxation. But after moving to Australia, I made my transition, I guess, to working with smaller businesses. And that's how I came to be doing what I'm doing right now, and primarily coaching accountants.
What kind of shape do you feel the accounting world is in right now?
Well, look, it's not the first time that we've really faced disruption. You know, everyone wants to talk about what's happening now, like it's, you know, the second apocalypse. If you take your mind and cast it back to maybe like the 1980s, when we had desktop computers come on the scene, that was a huge disruption for our industry. What it did was it actually separated us as accountants from the data. Back in the olden days, people brought us things in shoeboxes and however they kept their records, and we magically did everything with it. But when the desktop arrived, basically the client wanted to own their data. They wanted to do things themselves. And so we got relegated to doing a whole lot of compliance and cleanup work because of that. This isn't the first disruption that we've had of this magnitude, I don't think. It's just that most people, you know, haven't been around and practicing long enough to remember the last one in the 80s. But we've got a situation, I guess, now with disruption, and people are very tech focused. Because it is a technology based disruption, it's easy for accountants to get caught up in the fact that, hey, the solution is actually high touch, not high tech. And that, I think, is where the opportunity really lies.
Sure. And how equipped are accountants as a species to deal with disruption and change?
Well, apparently not very well equipped. I was doing another podcast. It was maybe just a week or two ago. And the day that I recorded the podcast, there was a brand new study that was released. And it was front page news on the Accountants Daily, saying that basically our margins are being squeezed. It was huge. It was dramatic. It went from like 25% down to like 14%. It was a big squeeze in the margin. And primarily that's driven by the fact that technology can do things faster, better, stronger than us. From an automation perspective and machine learning and AI, that stuff is basically reducing the amount of billable hours that people have left to charge for. And that's a huge problem. But people shouldn't be charging by the hour anyway. You know, we should have abandoned that decades ago. So we're our own worst enemy, because we shouldn't be in the position that we're in right now.
Yeah.
Because we should have never just been doing compliance-based work, and we should have never been charging by our time. Today's the second best day to change, right?
Well, we're going to dip into the world of pricing in this episode and maybe look at advisory on another episode with you. You've got a particular interest in pricing, haven't you? How did you start dipping your toes into this?
What I'm seeing a lot of accountants worrying about right now is how to grow their practices. And the natural inclination that everybody's got is, I've got to get on social media, I've got to change my brand, I've got to do this, I've got to do that. Stop. You need to fix your pricing. Mm-hmm. Your pricing's the fulcrum, right? I've said this more than once. Your pricing is the point at which you exert pressure in your business to gain leverage on your clients. There's no point going out and marketing yourself to get more people who don't pay you based on the value of what you deliver.
Yeah.
Definition of an insanity. Your business model is broken because you're not charging correctly. So first we need to fix pricing. And so that's kind of how I came into this. I want to help people and accountants grow their practices. But to do that, we actually have to fix the business model first. We have to get them creating more value and pricing it properly, and then we will figure out how to scale the practice.
Yeah, in other words, the answer to the question, what's the single biggest thing an accounting firm can do to grow most effective, fastest, is change your pricing.
Correct. that doesn't cost any money in advertising. When you advertise, John Wanamaker said it the best, right? 99% of your money is wasted. You just don't know, you know, which half. He said 50%, but I'm saying 99%. Yeah. Because when you put a message out there, most people don't read it. Mm. They don't remember it. They don't take action. But when you fix your pricing, the impact is immediate. If you put your prices up and you're now making 20% more or 30% more, which is pretty standard when you do it properly, that money flows straight through to your bottom line. It doesn't cost you more money to do the work. So it flows straight to your bottom line, which is huge in terms of cash flow.
Mm. Now, you wrote the book Pricing Value. Why did you call it that instead of value pricing?
Oh, just because I'm a contrarian.
Accountants would now know the term value pricing, wouldn't they? That's kind of been absorbed into the ecosystem.
And that's exactly why I didn't call my book Value Pricing. So here's the premise of this. When you say value pricing, the natural inclination for people when they say that phrase is they focus all of their attention on the word pricing. Mm. Because pricing is the action word in that sentence, right? So people are like, how do I get people to pay me more? How do I get the price I deserve? How do I deal with my clients that are price conscious? Everybody, you know, do I need 3 packages and how do I implement that? Stop. That is the exact wrong way of approaching this. The most powerful word in the phrase is actually value. So I want people to price the value. I want people to put the emphasis on the word value. First, we spend 90% of our time and effort getting to the heart of what is actually keeping your clients up at night, figuring out why it's keeping them up, how much it's costing them not to have a solution, and then pricing that. So pricing is this tiny little thing that you do way, way, way down the track. It's job 53, not job number one.
Yeah.
Job number one is value. It's teaching people from a subconscious perspective where to put their attention, really. Yeah.
So the great Ron Baker would say that pricing is an emotion, not a number. How would you define value?
Value to me is as Ron described it. It's an emotion. It's a feeling. It's an experience. It's not a number. 99% is perception. You know, you can actually use very subtle and subconscious cues. There are many different techniques that people can use to drastically impact and influence someone's perception of price without actually changing the physical number by even $1. I mean, look at all the studies that are out there about using the magic number 9, right? People say, you know, why do prices end in 9 and should my price end in 9? They have studied this over and over and over again. And you can actually sell more stuff at $39 than you can sell at $20. It's the same article. $20 is almost half the price of $39, but the 9 is magic. Yeah. It charms the brain. People think it's a steal because it's less than a round number. And so that just proves it to you right there. If you can sell more of X widget at $39 than $20, then price is not what you think it is. And this is the crux of it, because when you talk about price, one really, really bad thing happens. If you think it's a number, accountants think they're going to be shit hot at it. Right? Like the average accountant thinks, I'm really good with numbers, so I'm going to be fantastic at pricing. Absolutely incorrect, because they've missed the point. It isn't a number. And that's why you can't take your accounting hat and keep that on and try to become a pricing guru.
Yeah.
You've got to change your mindset. You actually have to unlearn all the really, really bad habits that you've been doing up until now that have kept you stuck in cost-based pricing methodologies, and there are many of them.
So what are some of the mistakes that accountants make when they want to attempt to value price?
Well, the first mistake that they make is premature quotation, right?
I see what you did there.
It's just as bad as premature ejaculation. And, you know, there's a blue pill for this as well, right?
You went and said it, didn't you? You went and said it.
The blue pill is that you don't quote too early. The quicker you quote, the more likely that you're going to quote a price that is far too low.
Okay.
So slow down and take your time. It ain't a race, right? Take your time, ask better questions, try to uncover the heart of value. What do they think is valuable?
So how do you go about investigating what is value for a client?
Better questions. I mean, the natural inclination when people come to us, it's like we're McDonald's order takers or something, right? Mm. People come to us, they're like, I want a Big Mac and I want fries, and we pencil it down, that'll be $9.99, and away they go. That's not our job anymore. We're in a 5-star restaurant here. Our job is to ask questions and share what the chef's special is and to entice people to aspire to more in their business. When someone comes to you and they need some bookkeeping and tax return, that's not keeping them up at night. The solution to that is of zero value to these people, because just because they do a tax return doesn't mean that they get to take their family on vacation, or that they get to, you know, have more work-life balance, or that they get to acquire their competitor. We need to dig deeper. We need to ask questions that ask these people, you know, my equivalent, I mean, how I explain it in my book Pricing Value is this. If you had a glass of water sitting on the desk, your sole focus and job is to figure out, is the person that you're trying to sell that glass of water to, are they sitting in their house? I.e., can they go to the kitchen and get some water for free? Are they in a car with three screaming, thirsty toddlers on a road trip from Perth to Adelaide in the outback, and the only place they can get water is at 7-Eleven? Are they in a third world country, or are they crawling across the desert to your oasis, right?
Got it.
Are these people? Mm-hmm. That's your primary role. But we're too busy as accountants trying to bamboozle them with our awards and accreditations. I won Accountant of the Year and Bookkeeper of the Year, and my software won this, and, you know, so-and-so did that, and here's a list of all the services I can do. No. We're diluting the effectiveness of our message with our bloody product and service. How thirsty are people? Why are they thirsty? Hmm. That's the job, right? That's our new job.
Yeah, but wait, though. We're told to be client-focused, and the client is always right, but then you're asking accountants to now lead this engagement and direct the conversation.
Yeah, the client is always right, because the client is only going to pay you pennies for your features and benefits and services, but they will pay any price for the solution to their dehydration.
Right? But do the clients know what they want?
Sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. Mm. And that's where we need to become a lot more skilled at asking open-ended questions. We need to help them to come to the realization that stuff is a problem in their business. The typical small business out there, because remember, I come at this from the perspective of somebody who's a cash flow expert. That's my main area of focus. Uh-huh. 90% of businesses have cash flow pain or working capital pain, 90%. And that shit keeps people up at night. Their tax returns and their bookkeeping may not keep them up at night, but the fact they can't pay their bills, that's crucial, right? So it's about figuring out what's going on. What's the true source of the problem? What mistakes are they making? If they had a solution, what would it be worth to them?
So you're talking about asking the question, what keeps you up at night? How thirsty are you and how dry is your desert? Or do you have a more sophisticated framework for handling value-based conversations?
Yeah, of course I do. But I first of all have to explain to people what it is. So they have to understand that they're coming at it from the perspective of trying to establish and quantify the depth of the client's thirst.
Right.
So your job is to keep asking questions. So you may start with a question that says, okay, let's just take a step back at this and figure out what's an easy way of looking at it. So I might come at to this and say, okay, in your business right now, what would you say is the number one challenge or pain point that you've got? And tell me about that. Hmm. And then when they answer, I would say, you know, why is that important to you? And I would start to dig and dig and dig with open-ended questions that get them to explore what's going on. And some things they're not going to know. And this is the really magical thing, is that sometimes if you are really good at asking questions, you will help your client uncover pain they never knew they even had.
Yeah, but it seems so simple, though, asking questions. Accountants have been used to giving the answers, haven't they?
Yeah, that's the primary problem. How I see it is that the skills that have made us fantastic accountants are the polar opposite of the skills that we need in terms of a continuum, mm-hmm. of the skills that we need to be good advisors.
Yeah.
So, for example, we are very consumed with accuracy as accountants, right? Cash flow is right or it's wrong. You can't do it three different ways. It either balances or it doesn't, right?
Yeah.
But to be a good advisor into price, you have to manage uncertainty, right? To do your job well as an accountant, you tell people, you control the situation. To be a great advisor into price effectively, you have to ask questions and you have to collaborate with your client. These skills are diametrically opposed, aren't they? And that therein lies the problem, is we've got all these really, really bright people, smart, really talented accountants with all the wrong skills to do the job that they think they now need to do or want to do. And it's about, how do we retrain them to do this job?
How coachable do you feel accountants are as a breed?
Well, it just depends, right? Depends on how thirsty they are. You know, when margins are being squeezed, people start to get pain.
Yeah.
And they start to get scared. And sometimes that's a good time to get leverage on someone and get them to take action. And sometimes it scares the crap out of them and they do nothing, right? Mm. So one of the big things I hear from accountants is, oh, you know, I'm scared I don't know all the answers. I'm scared I'm going to fail. I'm scared my clients are going to quit if I put my prices up. That's why control your fear is C number one on my list of six C's that you need to price value. You have to start with your own mindset. We have to control our stinking thinking and get a grip on it before we can move forward, because we're actually making decisions about what we think our clients can afford. That's not our position. I don't know how big someone's pain is or how deep their wallet is. We shouldn't be putting our own emotional junk about worth and self-value onto our clients. And most people are doing that.
That is a point, because a lot of accountants listening would say, well, I can't do that. My clients are price conscious. They're price sensitive. They'd never go for something like that.
Yes, because you've taught them to be price conscious. When you price your shit by the hour, guess what? You've taught your client that they can replace you with an hourly paid worker. You did that.
Right. Can all clients be value priced then?
Well, in a perfect world, yes, all clients can be value priced, but there's always going to be people who are closed-minded and fixed and are not actually open to being helped, right? I mean, we've all got clients like that. You've got people that just want to bitch and complain about stuff, and they don't really want to take action in their business. So those are going to be the hardest clients to reprice. So when I'm talking about how you go through the process of actually revaluing, because I call it revaluing your clients, not repricing them.
Okay.
I talk about segmenting. So I talk about segmenting your entire existing client database down. And one of the first things that you do is segment by mindset, because you can't help somebody who doesn't want to help themselves.
True.
Right? And I often find the more closed-minded the accountant is, the more closed-minded clients they have, because people attract people who are like them.
So is an interim step, Rhonda Lynn, to do fixed pricing and then move on to value pricing? Is that the natural progression?
No. Well, it is if you're doing it wrong.
Right? Educators.
No, because fixed pricing and cost pricing are the same thing. It's like a wolf dressed up in sheep's clothing. It's the same damn thing. It's a cost-based methodology. It doesn't matter whether you're fixing the price or whether you're doing it by the hour. You're still basing it on your internal cost structures. You're still fixing it at a certain amount, which means at a very deep level, what happens is you still haven't created enough differentiation in what you're offering to command a higher value price, and people are still going to always ask you for a discount. Yeah. So whenever I see people using fixed pricing, I just shake my head, because it's a waste of your time.
Yeah.
Yes, it's fixed, which has given them some degree of certainty. But if the clients are still asking you for a discount and you still haven't put them first and created and captured value, then you haven't done your job. In fact, you've actually dug yourself into a further hole, because now you've also fixed the price.
Hmm.
I don't like it.
I can tell. So in this tech world we live in, how much of the proposal-based apps and pricing-based apps out there help with value pricing?
None.
You know, there's a whole ecosystem of them, isn't there?
Yeah, super. So there's a whole bunch of people out there that are going to help you fix your pricing.
You sound thrilled about that.
It's nonsensical. Those apps are nonsensical. They may look good and they may aid in helping you to present something that is visually nicer and easier to get across, but they are not value pricing. No app can do value pricing, because an app cannot simulate the conversation. Without the conversation, there is no value-based price.
Right.
End of story, right? And that's the thing, like the most powerful pricing app in the world sits between your right and your left ear, and you need to bloody engage it. It's free.
So do pricing and proposal apps have a place?
Yeah, they definitely have a place in terms of presenting things in a visually and emotionally compelling manner, right? Because we as human beings, we make decisions based on survival instinct and emotion and visual responses. So the proposal apps are good from that perspective, but they're just not value pricing tools. And that's the distinction that I want to make. It just, the app is good and it serves a specific purpose, but it's never going to back you into a value-based price, and you can't expect it to.
Which seems like we've been talking about pricing value and value pricing for years. Have we made much headway?
Nope. Statistically speaking, according to a lot of the reports I'm seeing, and this is like globally, probably 85 to 90% of the accountants and bookkeepers out there are still not doing it based on value.
Why not?
I think that a lot of it is fear. I think a lot of it comes down to fear. A lot of it comes down to them being too caught up in the fact that they don't know this about pricing and they don't know that about pricing and they don't understand decoy pricing and all these things, when all they really needed to do was learn how to have better value conversations with your clients. It's not that hard, right? I use a really, really strong structure and system and foundation when I'm doing. And the reason I do that is for me to jump in and value price, I've been doing this unconsciously for many, many, many years. So I'm good at it. I know what questions I need to ask. But when I'm teaching somebody, I tell them in a very specific format, okay, we're going to start here. This is question number one, then question number two. And I teach them in a format because it takes a long time to get familiar and to get comfortable. And the other thing about this is that it is not unusual when I'm doing these calls and having diagnostics, 70% of the time, my client or prospect will have tears. That's uncomfortable for people. People are like, as soon as people start to cry, people start to like jump in and try to help them. And they don't let them sit in the pain. They don't let them explore the magnitude of what that means and the implications for how it's going to motivate them to move forward. And we need to get better at that. You know, this is really an interesting aspect of both pricing and cash flow, but there's an overlap and I'll share it. When you go in and fix someone's cash flow pain, it's really tempting for an accountant to think, well, we just give them the dashboards and the KPIs and we help them with financial literacy. But what about chronic poverty mindset? How many of our clients out there have this lack of abundance mentality, a poverty mentality, I don't want to make profit or pay tax? You know, they've got scarcity mentality. They've got all these mental things going on. It's exactly the same with pricing. It's exactly the same.
Wow.
We've got to change as human beings to earn the right to put our price up. If you don't invest in yourself and learn how to have these conversations and take more time and actually create and capture and deliver value, you haven't earned the right to put your price up. You don't deserve to get paid more than what you're getting paid right now.
I had one sales guy talk about pain in the sales conversation as if you can create some pain, pour petrol on it and put a match on it and really magnify that pain. Do you go along with that to accentuate the value?
I guess it depends on what your intention is.
Because it sounds quite cruel, doesn't it?
Well, I would perhaps phrase it a slight bit different. If I was sitting in a room right now with you face to face and I needed to sell you a fire extinguisher, there's two ways to do it, right? One of the ways is to come up with all these things of why you need to buy it and guilt you into it and use NLP to try to trick you into it. And it used to be $19.99 and today only it's $1 for you and all this crap. Or I could just light a fire.
Yeah.
One of those ways is much more effective.
Yeah. It's like the old phrase, you can lead a horse to water, but the best thing to do is salt the oats.
Correct.
Yeah.
You know, so it comes back to this, this whole thirst conversation. It isn't about making somebody be in pain. Mark my words, your clients are already in pain. Your job is to help them explore what that pain is, how bad it is, how it's affecting them. And most importantly, what is the cost to them right now of continuing to ignore that pain? That goes to economic value. If you know what it costs your client right now today to continue not to do X, which would fix their biggest problem, then you have leverage. And leverage is the most powerful thing in the world.
So I want to throw a grenade in here and ask you about timesheets. Is it ever?
I'm out of here.
Well, accountants might be thinking, can they hang on to them while they're making the transition to price and value?
Sure. If you'd like to hang on to my grand piano while I push you off the side of my boat and you sink to the bottom of the ocean, then go ahead.
Right. We've got your view on that then.
Timesheets are like holding on to a grand piano. You saw the movie, right? The piano where she falls overboard and it's tied to her leg. Timesheets are exactly that. They keep you trapped in cost-based pricing methodologies, which is not where you want to be. You don't need them. The cost of something doesn't make it more valuable to your client, and the cost of something doesn't make it any better for your firm. At the end of the day, everybody has this idea that if I somehow used fixed pricing or some other methodology to increase the amount of profit I make in my accounting firm, then I've hit the big time. Guess what? You don't know what you're doing, because at the end of the day, your profit is like a bag of buttons. Your number one job is you need to capture a larger and larger percentage of the amount of value that you create for your clients. That's your target. If you create $1 million of value for client A and you're charging $100,000, that's a 10%, you know, rate, right? That has nothing to do with your profitability. So your value of your firm is actually tied to the amount that you capture based on what you create, not your profitability. Profitability is useless to you. Nobody should be buying and selling an accounting firm based on how much their profit was last year and how much it is this year. We're looking at things like revenue recognition, pricing power, churn and retention. Those are the kind of metrics. How much of your revenue, what's the quality of it? Is it monthly recurring revenue? Is it forecastable, reliable? These are the things that are relevant. So timesheets are bad because they will keep you stuck where you are. You don't need them. Mm-hmm. And the longer that you hang on to the piano, the more likely you are to be at the bottom of the ocean.
Received loud and clear. Rhonda Lynn, we love you straight talking style here. And we haven't even touched on subscription-based pricing and that whole new business model. Maybe another time. If people want to find out more about what you do, get in touch with you, what's a good way for them to reach you?
Oh, look, it's easy for just search my name on anything social media, because there aren't too many Rhonda Lynns out there. You can find me on LinkedIn, Facebook, and obviously Twitter. And if you want to pick up a copy of Pricing Value and start your journey today, there's no better time than today. It's pricingvalue.co. When I send the books out, I always autograph them and sign them personally. And I always throw in free shipping to anywhere in the world. So that's one advantage, I guess, of getting it from you.
Sure. And what essentially would they get from the book, Rhonda Lynn?
Well, you're going to get a very strong framework of how you're going to start doing it. So this is not an esoteric exercise about why you need to do value-based pricing. It's not a story about the economic virtues of value pricing. It's a tool to show you how to do it. So you're going to come away with some steps that you can take, some real case studies that you can apply to your own firm, and a whole list of questions and things that you can work on. And anybody who's interested in taking the next step after that can try my workbook. So I'm just about to produce the first ever do-it-yourself workbook that I've ever done. I've never done a workbook before, but it's going to be 10 modules that by the end of it, you will be pricing value. Simple as that. And you can just study along at your leisure.
Yeah. And finally, if you had one piece of advice to give an accountant who's thinking of making the switch to value pricing, what would it be?
Start yesterday. You know, get going. Yeah, you can't learn to swim by reading a book on swimming. You actually have to implement. So take steps, start action.
And is it easier for them finally to work with a client they're already working with, or bring on a new client and start from scratch there?
Well, there's two things, right? Easy and best. Best is you always want to price your existing clients because that's where your primary revenue stream is coming from. But it is slightly easier to start off on a brand new foot pricing value with a new person because you haven't taught them how to value you, right? You're starting off the relationship on a good foot, on the right foot, based on value, and you're not having to retrain them. So that's always going to be easier.
Well, Rhonda and Carla, that's been superb today. Thank you so much for your time.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world-class. For show notes on today's and other episodes, plus some great blogs and resources to help accountants lead, sell, and perform at the highest levels, go to bdacademy.pro. Until next time, have a fantastic day.